Call the ordinance committee meeting for Thursday, May 10th. Roll call, Paul Govan.
Here.
Pete Stewart's here, David Key is absent. First thing on the agenda is the food sovereign, Harvin.
After the last committee meeting, you asked for a simplified version of this, and I reached out to Bernstein Scherer, who is the town's attorneys, and asked them if they had any such thing, and he immediately emailed me back this one-page ordinance, which he said covered the, was consistent with state statute and covered the, it doesn't contain anything else other than that, but, and Jeff and I have had some conversations of, he has some concerns about the simplicity of it and that there's no enforcement mechanism, but the purpose of it is to allow the activity in the community, and the state is still the responsible party for these kind of things. This just allows it. So.
And that's what we were looking to do, is allow it.
That's the attorney that provided this has provided it to others, but this is, it's one page, and it would become a stand, an appendix in our, I think you said appendix O, Jeff, would be in our ordinances.
Just as a standalone for under rules, is that what you're saying?
No, it would be part of the ordinance.
Part of the town code under O, but a new set, right, yeah.
It would be easier to find that way if anyone was looking for it, to see if the town allowed it, if it has its own identifier.
Is anybody here, again, from the... The new folks over here last time.
They don't post till 5:30. They're going to be here. This is on the council agenda tonight for the first reading,
okay.
And they will be in attendance then.
Okay. Anything else, Paul? I agree. I
keep it simple.
And your concern was what, Jeff? Again, that there wasn't a. Enforcement action?
I've shared my concerns with the town manager. I don't really want to speak any further on it. All due respect.
Understood. Anything else from any other council members that are hearing?
Nope. Simple. Which is
that's what we were, I guess that's what we were driving at, wasn't it, when we talked about it? Okay. And that
well,
is on
it took out the stuff that wasn't legal and according to the state, and it took out of the model ordinance that had been done by a food group, had a whole preamble in it about entitlement and authority and stuff that.
And this has been vetted by the state. This has been vetted by the state as an attorney that's given it in other towns.
Not to my knowledge. This has been created by an attorney who. Took the state statute and made the ordinance that didn't include all of this preamble information about communities' rights and towns, people's rights, and all those kind of things. This just simply addresses that.
It says we have it, we can do it.
That Bucksport recognizes the right of these small farmers to do this kind of activity.
And I think that's what we were looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nothing else. Next on the agenda is Appendix B, committee's draft.
There are two sections here. One is the council rules that were in conflict with the town.
Sure.
The town charter, and so there's a section that makes these consistent with the charter, and then there's the section which is the changing your nine committees to what is essentially the four committees with the, and continuing the Economic Development Committee as it sits. Jeff can explain the council, the ones that were in conflict. I think we had talked about
this. I know, and I'll just real quick. I know we had changed, one of the changes in here is moving from the last Thursday to the second, the fourth Thursday.
That was your recommendation.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's one of the changes that's coming up. The special meeting one, why is that changed as a notice for 24 hours down to 12?
Because 12 is what's in the charter.
It is, yeah. Okay. I'll let you go then if you can. I guess if these are matching.
I don't have to have a copy of that one in front of me.
Okay, I'll go down. And, effective date, we've changed it from 30 to 7.
Again, that's in the charter, yeah. Oh, no, excuse me, that's not. That. Well, that is a charter requirement that was made just recently.
We just changed that,
yes,
correct?
Yes, right.
Yeah. Selection of the chair, it's changed from those present to the council membership.
Again, that reflects charter language.
And forfeiture of office, a member will forfeit his office of member. A member will forfeit his office. A member will forfeit his office of member in addition to reasons noted in section 207 of the town charter, which deals with council rules for failure to attend. We've changed it from 6 to 3 consecutive regular meetings. Is that
because that's in the charter?
Consistent with the charter, correct?
Yes.
And those were the substantive, those were the only changes that were under the rules for Appendix B that were made for changes.
Yeah.
So those are the ones other than the second and the last, changing the second and fourth, because that's something we'd ask for. The rest of them match up with what's in the charter.
Yeah, the rest of the changes deal with charter conflicts.
Okay. Questions?
And then the other ones are those four committees,
right,
that you had.
Right. And then the second part of this that we had talked about was the changing of the committee structure,
yep,
down to four committees.
It's four committees plus economic development, which stays basically the way it is now with outside membership as well as internal ones.
And when looking at these, this was sort of a mash of the two coming through, what, you know, as far as the rules and what the substance is going to be and posting of agendas and things like that. So. And we have the four committees of Finance and Investments Committee. Basically, that is dealing with any of the finance, town budgets, bonds, investments. Services Committee, review matters related to administration, department functions, social and community services, technology appointments, employment and negotiations. Infrastructure and Properties Committee, this review all matters pertaining to public buildings, land, marina, walkways, trails, streets, sewer, water, gas, power, communications, and property acquisitions and disposal. Regulatory Review Committee, to review all matters related to ordinances, town charters, citizen initiatives, rules, policies, and quasi-judicial matters. And again, Community and Economic Development Committee, to review economic matters, comprehensive planning, public events, citizen forums, public relations. Procedure is to have three, no more than four members, I think was one of the things that was talked about. Draft meetings, agendas will be posted for all of the committees available on the website. The committee meeting minutes posted on the website. Non-committee council members attending a committee meeting will have voting rights if they have been present for the entire discussion of an issue, providing that at least two of the three appointed members of the committee are present. Two appointed members of the committee shall constitute a quorum. The mayor shall serve as a member of all committees for quorum purposes. The mayor can appoint members of the council and or citizens of the town to special committees authorized by the council. And talks about using Robert's Rules of Order when nothing else is in place. Again, I think this gets us to where we had talked about being. Any questions or anything?
Nope.
Jim?
Under the present ordinances, it states that the Streets and Roads Committee will have three people from the public at large on that committee. will that continue on these new committees?
No, because that committee will disappear, is the way I understand it. We're combining that into, I would assume that would fall under...
Come under the infrastructure.
Infrastructure and property.
Yeah. Anything else?
Looks like everyone will be on two.
Sure. I assume so. Everybody will have two committees, at least two, or
and economic development.
Right. Anyone who wants to...
Now, in this, the little ones like police advisory board and stuff like that,
those are still in effect. Yeah.
This is taking care of this is condensing those seven committees or eight, nine committees.
Nine
committees that we had.
Perfect.
That covers other those advisory boards throughout recreation and things like that will still continue to be there.
There is another one. It's on my manager's report for tonight. But one of those advisory boards is to the Bucksport Bay Healthy Communities, and Councilor Rabb has resigned as the council representative from that, and so another councilor would need to volunteer for that. We'll be talking about that later. But that's one of those that's got a vacancy at this point.
Okay. I'll set on that one.
This is on for tonight for first reading.
First reading, right. I think most of these are first readings.
David, he's not pretty sure.
All right. Next on the agenda is property maintenance ordinance. This deals with basically creating a new chapter, Jeff, and pulling things out of Chapter 5 to make a Chapter 13 strictly for property maintenance standards.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
As you recall, currently in the town code, Chapter 5 contains both building standards and property maintenance standards, and the ordinance committee reviewed a proposed change to that chapter that would, in effect, only have building standards in Chapter 5. We took all the property maintenance standards out of Chapter 5 and have moved them into this new Chapter 13. We have a few changes and some clarifications made, and a couple of new proposals are also in here too, so I'll go through these if you'd like.
Sure.
The first five sections really are just boilerplate requirements that any ordinance has to have: a section, a purpose section, authority, applicability, severability and conflict, and administration. Would you like me to read through those?
Those, you know, looking at what we have in Chapter 5 compared to what you're putting here, those are actually word for word, and those are.
It might be worth just reading the purpose section, because that's unique.
Yep.
That's not from Chapter 5, but it's the purpose of this chapter. So the purpose of this chapter is to provide minimum standards to protect the environment, municipal services, property values, and the health, safety, and welfare of the public insofar as they may be affected by the maintenance of any existing building, structure, or property, and to provide administration and enforcement of those standards. So again, the property maintenance standards that we have now in the town code have been in Chapter 5 for at least 18 years, if not longer. So they've been around for quite some time, and they've worked fairly well. There haven't really been any issues that I can recall over the past 18 years about the enforcement of those standards. So I just want to point that out before we get into the nitty-gritty of that. In the administration section, it starts off by saying the CEO shall administer the provisions of the chapter, and the administrative provisions of the Maine Uniform Building and Energy Code apply to any permitting that may be required to maintain any building or property. That's reflective of the same language in Chapter 5. The administrative provisions of the MUBEC apply there as well. 5.3 and on are the same language that's already deals with demolition permits. And there's no changes at all in any of that language. That was an amendment we made to Chapter 5 back when AIM was proposing a demolition of the mill property. So I can read through them if you like, but there's no changes made in any of those provisions.
Oh, all set with those.
Okay. Yep. So Section 6 is where most of the property maintenance standards are located now, and they're broken down into types of standards. The first type deals with water, land, and vegetation. 611, surface water runoff and subsurface drainage from any property must be contained or diverted to the extent necessary to prevent water from entering any public street or sidewalk and causing a public safety hazard, or entering any property or building and flooding or damaging that property or building. Most of this language comes out of section 401.4 in chapter 5. I've added some clarification about water that may enter an abutting property or building and causing damage to that property. I have had complaints from people of that happening, and there's no provision in the ordinance now to deal with that. So this would allow that to be dealt with. A public safety hazard from water entering the street would occur if there's sufficient water flow onto a sidewalk or road and it freezes or floods the road. In those cases, you'd have a public safety hazard. I was questioned the other day from a citizen who asked if they would be prohibited from washing their homes or washing their driveways or cars in their driveways, I think because of that language, but that's absolutely not the case at all. Water running off your driveway onto the street, in that case, would not present a public safety hazard. Uh, 6111, no surface or subsurface water may be drained to the public sewer system. That reflects state requirements in our Chapter 9 sewer ordinance. 612, no fill containing hazardous materials, junk, garbage, or refuse may be deposited on any property except in a landfill licensed to accept such fill. That reflects state law. It's not a provision in our property maintenance standard now. I'm suggesting we add that just for clarification, because I have had situations where that's happening in town and haven't been able to do anything about it. 6121, disturbed soils must be stabilized in accordance with best management practices for erosion and sedimentation control. That reflects state law and our land use ordinance. 613, open shafts, wells, tanks, and other subterranean cavities that present a fall hazard must be removed, filled, covered, barricaded, or otherwise protected to prevent a public safety risk.
So any of these that pertain to state law, who enforces those?
If it's in your local ordinance, it would be locally enforced.
If it's not,
so good luck getting enforced by the state. They're very short-handed, and regarding the fill, I was informed by a state official of a complaint they received, and they asked the town to address it. They're just so overworked now that they don't have the time or manpower to deal with all these things, so they expect the town to help out. 613, is also proposed. It's a public safety issue, not addressed currently in our property maintenance standards. 614, storm damage, disease, or dead trees that are at risk of causing structural damage on an abutting property or that are a public safety hazard must be removed to the extent necessary to eliminate the risk or hazard. Removal of vegetation in any shoreland district is subject to compliance with the applicable provisions in Appendix K of the Bucksport Town Code. This is also new language. We had a significant amount of storm damaged trees a while ago, most of which were taken care of, but some were not. There wasn't much that could be done in terms of requiring these trees to be removed that posed a public safety hazard. This language would help out quite a bit in that area.
So we're adding, if it doesn't pose a threat, right?
A public safety hazard.
Public safety hazard. Mm-hmm. We're adding something so we can enforce it?
If you have a storm damage or disease or dead tree that poses a public safety hazard.
Then we already have something in place to take care of that.
No, I'll point out when the language I'm reading is already in the ordinance. This one here is proposed. There's nothing in the ordinance now that addresses dealing with storm damaged trees.
The only way that under this proposed language is that if a storm-damaged or diseased tree posed a threat to public safety or to somebody else's property, and a butter's property would be the only way that there could be any, and, I mean, it's not just any tree that cut.
Where is public safety hazard defined? I couldn't find it. Do we have a definition of that?
There's no definition.
So it's whose interpretation?
My fear on something like that is, without having a proper definition on what, whose eyes is a public safety hazard, I get concerned if we don't. I like black and whites. I don't like grays. I've dealt a lot in my world with grays, and sometimes it can get you in trouble. But if we're gonna have rules and we're enforcing, and person A calls up and what's that threshold, I guess? What determine that threshold?
I can answer your question later on when we get into the section that deals with nuisance conditions. That, I think, better defines what constitutes a safety risk. But it's not a definition, it's just it's language that helps the code officer identify a risk to public safety that needs to be dealt with. So we can talk more about that when we get to that section.
But
we can come back to this if you want to.
I'm, and I don't know if I'm the only one, but I'm having, I have.
You're seeing somebody getting upset for a branch hanging over when.
I guess I just don't know where the line is, and that those concern me. That I think you're going to end up. I think we're going to end up getting more complaints on what is and isn't, then the enforcement action is going to be worth doing.
I've had people call me, complain about trees that they think were at risk of falling and doing damage to their property.
Mm-hmm.
And the best I've been able to tell them is, unfortunately, there's nothing the town can do. It's a civil matter. As you'd have to deal with it through
the court. That's a great idea, in my opinion. That's a perfect idea. Because it is, I mean, me telling someone what they can do with their property, I have a hard time doing that.
Yeah.
Amen.
Well, that's one scenario. But the other scenario is if you have a heavy storm event that partially brings down trees that look very easily like they're going to fall into a public way and do damage to vehicles or pedestrians. That's something that can be identified by public safety officials and dealt with through this ordinance or dealt through state law, I suppose. I think the fire department, the police department, I think have the ability to deal with that. But this is just another way to.
I am more concerned of adding rule on top of rule if there's already a state law. My thought is, you know, if the state can't handle it, then we have a recourse to the folks in town that, and if it's passing the buck or if it's what it's just doing, but we start going on top of what state law is and being a state law enforcer. That doesn't sound right, but I'm getting concerned of if the rules are already there, why are we making it more onerous to the folks that are there, I guess? Is that making sense to...
Let me just add to this. In our land use ordinance now, we have a whole section that was adopted to reflect DEP standards that were updated a couple of years ago to deal specifically with storm damage and disease and dead trees in shoreland zones. So there's language in our town code right now that deals with handling those matters in shoreland zones. This language here would make it town-wide. And that's being consistent. If you're charged with the responsibility of dealing with this issue in shoreland zones, why not town-wide?
Well, shoreland zones are different than town-wide anyway. Stuff I do on Jacob, well, I'm actually in a shoreland zone, but something someone does on Bucks Mills Road, not in a shoreland zone, they can do different things than someone can in a shoreland zone. So comparing the two, I mean, they're not even comparable because they're two different zones.
But the issue I'm talking about, though, is the same, exactly the same. You're dealing with trees that pose a public safety hazard. There's language down in our town code that deals with that in shoreland zones. This language here would, again, make it applicable statewide, townwide, excuse me. We can put an asterisk on this one if you'd like to, just so we can move on. 615. This language is proposed because, again, I've received complaints from citizens about properties that have been abandoned in town because of foreclosures or whatever the case may be. People walk away from properties and allow their nicely landscaped properties just to grow up into a jungle. And it's causing concern to neighbors who continue to maintain their properties. So this language is an attempt to address that concern. There's no way to address it now. Vegetated landscaping is not required to be maintained, except that no vegetated landscaping in the compact area may be uncared for to the extent that a public safety concern is identified by the CEO for any of the following reasons. Number one, overgrown vegetation has become a fire risk to buildings or structures. Number two, overgrown vegetation has become a habitat or cover for wildlife that may cause injury, disease, or property damage. And number three, overgrown vegetation provides cover for unauthorized use or illegal activity. There won't be too many situations, I don't think, where this section would be enforceable, but when somebody comes to me with a complaint about uncared for properties, there's absolutely nothing I can do
to help them. They're coming in reference to foreclosed properties, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. Yeah. 9 out of 10 is foreclosed properties.
And I could reach out to the bank or mortgage company that governs that, but there's no guarantee they're going to reply, and often don't. Sometimes they don't reply.
Right. So
what would you do?
We're going to spend time to enforce something that we can't enforce with anybody. I mean, that's the issue I have with something. Like, I understand that, okay, because it looks gross. Okay, we have them in town. We have them in about every town has them.
It's not looks related at all. Looks are not an issue. Aesthetics is not something that can be identified as a public safety concern. Well, it has to do with public safety, protecting public safety. The complaint I've been receiving is from vermin that find these overgrown patches of grass and woody vegetation to be provide cover for them, and they come out and go over to the neighbor's property and cause damage. That's the biggest concern I'm getting, and this is the only way I can think of to deal with this.
But what are you going to do with that for the bank that owns it and won't respond? Where do you take it? Where would we as a town take it? Are we going to... What exactly are we going to do?
If it rises to that level where it's an issue that's so egregious that an enforcement action becomes necessary, then the only recourse then would be to take the matter to court to deal with it with council authorization. As I said, this ordinance, this language is here. It's not in our ordinance now, but it's in here because of the possibility that something so egregious could happen that we need to do something about it. And there's not much we can do right now. It, by the way, just pertains to properties in the compact area, not the bulk of the town, just the compact area. But I'll put an asterisk on this too. I'm sensing there's some reservation about that one, but we can maybe make a decision about that after we finish reviewing the entire ordinance. 6.2, there was language that was drafted to deal with the maintenance of private roads. I left the section in there, but I did not include the language because I wanted to discuss this with the committee to see if you believe, again, public safety might warrant some provisions to ensure that public safety officials can respond to a 911 call in a timely manner. There have been occasions where there have been ambulance calls down along dirt roads that have been difficult to maneuver because of the conditions of the road. The fire chief was supportive of the draft language, but I decided not to put it in here for the time being. I just wanted to get some sense from this committee if you think it's important enough to protect the public by having some language that requires you to maintain your private roads.
It's not protecting the public.
What's that?
It's not protecting the public.
It's protecting the person that could be affected.
Right, and you would be protecting the fire and the police. They're not the public. Public shouldn't be on my private road. I don't have a private road, but so we're doing it. This would be to protect the employees, city employees. They'd be on that public road.
Well, it has to do with response time. That's the issue with poorly maintained roads is once the fire vehicle or the ambulance gets on that road, they have to slow down. And I've heard that there have been instances where an ambulance actually got stuck on the road, brought them to a dead halt. And fortunately, there was no loss of life in that case there, but it could very well be a loss of life if your forward progress is suddenly stopped because you hit a muddy patch of the road or ruts you couldn't get over. That happens. So I'm not suggesting, as I said, there's no language in here to address that unless you'd like to consider some language, and we can bring some back to you for that.
Right now there is none in that.
So I'm looking at the folks that live on the upper Long Pond Road that are in those two places far out. Mm-hmm. From the transfer station out, that's a private road, correct?
It's a public easement.
From the sludge dump out all the way?
It's a public easement. It's not maintained by the town. It's a public easement, though. Public has a right.
Who would be responsible for the maintenance of that all the way out to those two residences, those folks that live out there? Because there's no way in heck you can get an ambulance out there in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, I mean, that would have to be ironed out as to how you require roads to be maintained. Who's responsible for that? That would all have to be worked out.
Let's skip over this one, okay?
Yeah. 6.3, outdoor storage. This is a whole group of standards that are currently in our property maintenance standards. 6.3.1, no unserviceable, discarded, worn out, or junked motor vehicle or vehicle parts may be stored outside on any property in the compact area. That's from section 401.3. 6.3.2, no more than two unserviceable, discarded, worn out, or junked motor vehicles may be stored outside on any property outside the compact area except in a licensed automobile graveyard. That's from 401.3. 6.3.3, no accumulation of discarded, worn out, or junked items may be allowed outside on any property except in a licensed junkyard. Discarded, worn out, or junked items include any physical objects that are no longer maintained for their intended purpose and which are rotting or rusting or otherwise in a state of decay, disintegration, delamination, deformation, degradation, damage, or deterioration. That's from 404.1 with a little detail added. The last sentence I just read is added for detail. 6.3.4, no mobile home may be permanently stored on any property. A mobile home is considered permanently stored if it remains on a property for 1 year without being permitted and approved for occupancy. That's from section 308.4. The second sentence is added to clarify what being permanently stored means. 6.3.5, all refuse and garbage must be stored in a sanitary manner in closed bags, cans, or receptacles with covers, or in structures or containers intended for waste storage. That's from 404.2. 6.3.5.1, refuse or garbage may not be stored in any manner or quantity that causes the attraction of animals or emits foul odor. That's also from section 404.2. Waste containers may not be filled over capacity. That's proposed new language. 6.3.6, waste containers in the compact area may not be emptied or moved on or off-site by a commercial hauler between the hours of 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. on any day. That's from section 404.4. 6.3.7, waste containers contracted for regular waste disposal must be screened from ordinary view by pedestrians on the waterfront walkway and by pedestrians and motorists on Main Street or Route 1. This requirement applies to one or more container with a total or combined volume of 1 cubic yard or greater. That's from section 404.3. 6.3.7.1, screening may be provided by Number one, natural or altered topographical features such as hills, gullies, or embankments that are stable and vegetated. Number two, vegetation such as trees and shrubs that effectively provide screening at all times. Number three, stone, brick, or concrete walls. Or number four, buildings, fencing, or other structures except motor vehicles, box trailers, and similar structures. That's from 4.3 with a little a few more details added for clarity. 6.3.7.2. All buildings, fences, and structures providing screening in accordance with section 6.3.7.1 must be structurally sound, free of rot and decay, and properly maintained. That's new language proposed. 6.3.7.3. All fencing utilized for screening must be designed and installed to resist damage from the force of wind and to remain stable and plumb in frozen soil. That's new language proposed. 6.3.7.4. The exterior surface of fencing utilized for screening must be uniform in appearance and comprised of materials customarily used for fence installations. The material used may be wood, metal, vinyl, composite, stone, or masonry. For the purpose of this section, exterior surface means the side facing a street or an abutting property. That's new language proposed. Any questions on that section? All right, 6.4 deals with buildings and structures. 6.4.1, all buildings and structures and appurtenances attached thereto must be maintained in good repair and free of defects, dilapidation, and decay. That's from section 402.1. 6.4.2, all vacant structures must be secured to the extent necessary to prevent unauthorized entry. That's new language proposed. 6.4.3, no building intended for human occupancy may have any opening that allows the entry of wild animals into or under the building. That's from section 402.6. 6.4.4, no exterior wall may remain without finished siding for more than 6 months. That's from section 303.4. There's a change, though, in the original language. The time length allowed is 1 year. I can change that back to 1 year if you prefer. But this language proposes just 6 months to allow a building to remain without finished siding.
If it was the year before, why change it? My opinion, sorry.
Is that the wish of the committee?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the same would apply to the next session for finished roofing?
Yeah.
Well, the reasons why a shorter time period was allowed is because underlayment products often don't last a year. They start ripping under the force of wind and UV degradation in a fairly short time, so you end up having properties that look like they're falling apart. Tarps covering roofs, those don't last that long either. But
we, a lot of this stuff, and you said we've had a couple examples, but I'm wondering why we're trying to reinvent the wheel here and changing a lot of this stuff. If we've already got it in place and I don't see where we have a huge issue in town where this stuff is happening. What's the impetus for trying to change all this stuff?
I'm just trying to agree that there's a lot of changes being proposed. I'm citing sections.
I understand. I'm just wondering why. Why are we making it harder on ourselves? And if we've already had the rules in place, why not just transfer those into the new section?
Well, part of the update is to provide clarity and reorganization. And so by breaking it down into sections.
And I can understand clarity and reorganization. I don't want to change the rules if the rules are working and they've worked for 18 years, like you said when we started. I don't want to start adding new stuff that's going to. I don't see where we have an issue with. Is I guess where I'm trying to.
Well, I've heard you express concern about two things so far. Are there other things too that you're concerned about that you haven't spoken?
We haven't got through them all. I mean, I'm going through and seeing what you referenced, what we did, and things like that. I just changing it from 6 months to a year. I just want to know.
Well, I explain why I suggested 6 months because of the reason that.
And all I'm saying, Jeff, is I don't want to make it any harder on anybody in the room. That's
so I perfectly understand. We can stick with 1 year. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
I correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, but I think what he's saying is, why didn't we take what was in our policy or our ordinance before and draft this new policy? We're adding restrictions. That I think, if I'm not, I think that's what he means. And I agree. If we've had an ordinance that's worked. We're reorganizing. All about reorganizing. But if we have ordinances that work and the language has worked for however many years, why do we change them? Why do we add?
Well, as I explained earlier, in some cases I've received complaints that I've not been able to help citizens deal with because of the lack of language in the property maintenance sections of the town
right,
code.
But a couple of those are instances that actually the state should be helping. Not us.
In a perfect world, that would be great, but they don't. But anyway, can we move on to finish this out before we run out of time?
Yep.
6451. No roof on a building in the compact area may be finished or refinished with wood roofing material. An existing roof finished with wood roofing material may be repaired with like material. That's section 303.1. And by the way, if any of these existing provisions, now that we're reading them aloud, if you think that they're too restrictive, by all means, speak up. There's no reason why.
And I appreciate that some of them you didn't include, you know, going down through the stuff that was in.
Some wasn't necessary.
Exactly. You know, and that's why I think this is a good process to go through this. I don't think it needs to be more detailed than what it needs to be, what was in here, because it worked. But continue, please.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, where was I?
Oh, 646.
646. All interior surface must be kept in good repair, clean, and free of mold and chipping or flaking lead-based paint. Asbestos-containing material must be maintained to the extent necessary to prevent the release of asbestos fibers into the air. 403.1 addresses that to some extent, but I've added some clarification and some language that addresses, again, public health concerns. 6461, all removal of lead-based paint and asbestos-containing material must be conducted in accordance with state law. That's a given. But again, having it in our ordinance helps to deal with situations that might come up where lead-based paint is not being properly handled or asbestos, friable asbestos.
Right, but if it's a state law, it doesn't have to be in our ordinance. If it's a state law, it's a state law, period. It doesn't have to be in our ordinance. We can still address it. But I'm fine with that. Okay. I mean, but I'm just saying, I understand what you mean, but if it's a state law, it's a state law. Whether it's in our ordinance or not, we can enforce it.
But having it in a local ordinance, too, helps to become more familiar, help the citizens of the town become more familiar that indeed there is some language here, that some regulations that you need to pay attention to.
Sure.
647, all exits and secondary means of escape for a building must be kept clear of obstructions and in operating condition. That's out of life safety code, but it fits well here because it deals with property maintenance. 648, all required lighting must be maintained in operating condition. That's out of 405.1. All mechanical heating, ventilation, and electrical equipment installations must be maintained in operating condition. That's from 407.1. All chimneys, smokestacks, and similar appurtenances must be maintained structurally safe and sound and in good repair. That's from section 402.1. 6492, no exhaust fan may be vented into an attic or through an eaves soffit panel. That's from 405.2. With a little clarification, the language about through an eaves soffit panel is put in there because it reflects a requirement in the building code that's often misunderstood. I'll see it quite frequently where people have ventilate bath exhaust fans into their soffit vent because the soffit vent is ventilated. So I think that's a great way to get that warm, moist air out of your home. It's a horrible way to do it, though, because a lot of that warm, moist air goes right back up through the soffit vents into your attic where it condenses and causes mold and deterioration over time. And it's against code. 6410, all plumbing and septic system installations must be maintained in a sanitary and operating condition. That's from 406.1. 6411 through 14 are added language, but they seem to fit into the theme of this section. All smoke and carbon monoxide detectors must be maintained in operating condition. All sprinkler systems must be maintained in operating condition. All fire alarm systems must be maintained in operating condition. All radon mitigation systems must be maintained in operating condition.
I have an issue with those, just for the simple fact that if I buy an existing building and the system, or I shut my system off in my house, the sprinkler system. I don't think that I should be required to have, if I don't want to have that myself as a sprinkler system, I don't think I should be required by ordinance by the town to maintain that.
If it's a sprinkler system required by code.
This one, but it doesn't say that. This just says all. And that's where I think we get into trouble, that if we say all, that to me that's required or not required. And if I don't want to put a smoke detector in my house, am I required to put a smoke detector in my house?
By code, yes.
Radon detector?
No, radon. The section on radon would be addressed most likely in a multifamily occupancy where there are known high levels of radon that the tenants are exposed to, and the landlord decides to not operate the mitigation system. Tenants complain about that. That language will allow this town to address that.
But it also allows, if I have it in my own personal house, it allows enforcement.
That's extremely unlikely.
I understand that, Jeff, but a lot of these are extremely unlikely. You know, we talk about the tarp on the roof. That's a one in a thousand houses here, but it happens. And I get concerned when we use words like all and we put these things in here when, you know, if I don't have that, or if I don't operate my sprinkler system in my house, if I have a letter of this, I'm in violation. I don't think that's the intent of what we're trying to do. I absolutely agree. If somebody has a multifamily house and it's required, or it has an operating sprinkler system, by all means, for public safety, yes. But if I have that in my own house and I decide I don't want to turn the water on anymore and have that run, I don't think. And by having words like all and things like that, I get concerned that, you know, I'm subject to those rules.
Well, perhaps with one word missing in these sessions, that would help you clarify the intent of this, and that's the word required. The word required after all would, I think...
If places are required to have this by code, by law, yeah, whatever the case is, then...
So if I add the word required after the word all, would that satisfy you? All required sprinkler systems, all required fire alarms, all required...
For that. You just say that it's required for houses to have sprinkler smoke alarms in the...
By code.
Just said,
by code. By code it is. That's, yeah.
Smoke detector.
It's all required, so how are they going to tell whether or not I have a smoke detector in my house?
If you don't let them in, they're not...
Okay. Again, it's one of those things where they have to come in, and there has to be a reason to come in, and all of a sudden that's a known thing. No one can knock on your door and say, let me check your fire extinguishers, for smoke detectors.
Those issues would likely be discovered one of two ways. Either you have a fire in your home, or you're making a change to your home that requires a building permit.
Right.
Nobody's going around to inspect single-family homes to see if your detectors are being maintained.
But I think by having the language of required, because there are certain buildings and instances where it is required.
Yeah, smoke and carbon, those are definitely required. Sprinkler systems are required by code in certain occupancies. And fire alarms also are required in certain occupancies. Yeah. Radon mitigation would only be required, as I said earlier, if you have high levels
in multifamily.
Yeah.
But if you go into a single-family house and you see the radon system's not on, are they in violation then?
Well, that wouldn't be required then, would it? There's no code that requires.
I think that's what I was trying to get at, that if it's not required, then if we put in the language that if it's in a required use, I think that's where I was, my concern was.
Yep.
Session 7 is demolition standards. There's absolutely no changes proposed in that other than just renumbering the sessions. Unless you like me too, I don't feel I need to read through those.
And this is one that we kind of just redid.
This was change made to deal with the AIM demolition primarily.
And there are no changes from what I saw either.
No, the language is exactly the same, just renumbering.
Actually, when you did this, you made it so that John Q. Citizen could do...
We gave it a little bit more.
Sure.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah.
The exemptions for demolition permits is dealt with earlier on. We kind of skipped over that, but there are exceptions for permits to do demolitions. And those weren't changed. Session 8 is a new session that's proposed, and before I read through it, I would like to hopefully I sent this section to the to fire chief to get his thoughts on it, and he's not here tonight, I don't think, but he replied by email, and this is what he said about Section 8, safety inspections. Jeff, I completely agree with these proposals. After a number of serious and even fatal fires in these units in Maine over the last few years, and the fact that the owners and landlords have been convicted of numerous different violations and criminal offenses, it would be to everyone's benefit, but especially the tenants and first responders. That's what the fire chief had to say about this, which briefly is a section that requires inspections of multifamily occupancies once every 5 years. So 8.1, all buildings containing three or more dwelling units or two or more dwelling units and a commercial occupancy shall be subject to a full building safety inspection conducted jointly by the code enforcement office and fire department at least once every 5 years. The purpose of the inspection is to verify compliance with the applicable provisions of this chapter and Chapter 5 building codes and standards that affect the safety of multiple tenant occupancies. 8.1.1, a full building safety inspection shall include all common areas of the building, the interior of all dwelling units, basements, utility rooms, and accessible attics. 8.2, a full building safety inspection shall be scheduled with the property owner or their property management agent at least 30 days before the date of inspection. The building owner or their agent must be present during the inspection. 8.3, building owners shall be provided with a written inspection report of a safety inspection. If any violation is identified, the report shall describe the expected actions to be taken and the time allowed for the actions to be taken. Follow-up inspections may be arranged to ascertain that expected actions have been taken. So I went through and tallied up how many multifamily properties we have in town, and combined with the commercial occupancies that have two or more apartments in them, we have 64 properties that this would impact, 64 properties. And a total of approximately 379 individual dwelling units would be affected by this language. Once I did that tally, I'm not sure 5 years is sufficient enough time. That would average about one building a month that would need to be done to get through a five-year cycle. If you have 64 properties, or 60 months in 5 years, so about one a month would need to be done. That might be a little bit too much for the fire department to deal with. So if you are receptive to this idea of requiring safety inspections, we might want to extend it out a little bit more to 5 years.
My only issue is, when you do that, we're losing that kind of... I agree, safety inspection. I think a report ought to go to all the tenants. That if you find violations, the tenants ought to be notified also, that if they have some recourse they can take. But if we start spreading this out over 10 years, 15 years, what are we catching? You know, if we're going to do it, then let's do it correct or not do it at all. I think 5 years is more than
enough
time.
You're okay with 5 years.
I am, and I think that, and I agree with Craig when he says that all too often, and I think it's, you know, you can not have to look very far back in records of news reports that we have people that are dying. And I think public safety on something like this is to make sure that we do have people that are maintaining their properties where their people are living. And if they aren't up to code, then I'd hand a piece of paper to the tenant in apartment one and say, here you go, this is what you're living in. So I don't think you should go any more than 5 years. And I think we get it done.
Yeah,
I think once we, because I think there's, we got to make sure that the language and all the things we've talked about are correct with what we're looking. I know we've had some questions and some comments on, you know, making things, some changes. But I think anytime we have almost 400 people, 400 citizens living in something that we're required, they're putting their trust in somebody else to live. I think it is incumbent upon us in public safety in the town.
It's well more than 400 people. It's 400 units.
Okay.
It could be occupied by families.
So you could have 1,000 folks up there.
I don't know how many people are involved there, but there's certainly more than 400.
Yeah, so where I stand, I think it's something that should be done. And I think it's if you're doing it right, it's not going to take, you shouldn't have any violations. You know, you should be able to have, I'm going to rent a place, you should be able to know that you're living in a safe environment. And if you're not, let's fix it.
All right, so you want to leave the language in there as it is?
I don't know what anybody else is thinking here, but I think it's, this is one of those, when everything we're talking about here is public safety hazards and everything else, to me, this is, you know, somebody living in Florida renting out a place and they're not taking care of it, but yet they're charging $1,000 a month for folks living there. If they're not keeping their place up to code where these folks are, should be safe in their environment, then bad on us. We're in all charge of our own houses. You know, it's on us. We ought to make sure that if somebody's renting off somebody else, they ought to be able to be safe in there.
So it kind of touches on what Paul mentioned, though, about ensuring that when you call 911, they can get to you. You know, that's about public safety as well. It's not, you know, it's...
I, and again, I'm not going to go down the idea of somebody renting a house on the East Bucksport Road out in the middle of the North 40, someplace down on, you know, long on the backside of Long Pond. If they're renting that...
They've made that decision.
There are certain things that we just can't legislate all the way through. You know, we can't have everybody have a 20-foot paved road to a place that's 30 miles off the beaten path on the backside of a pond someplace. So.
Well, see, we're adopting, proposing these safety inspections to ensure that we do it now instead of waiting until we have a fatality.
Correct.
And the reason why we're talking about road standards is for the very same reason, to do it now before we have a fatality because we couldn't get there in time to save the patient.
For those places that are multi-occupancy residences off the beaten trail, can you name one that we have? And then forward to them?
The Strickland Ridge Road is a road that ambulances had difficulty getting.
He's talking
to.
Multifamily.
Multifamily. Off the beaten path?
Yeah. I mean, some of this that we're going to inspect. We're going to go inspect these places. And I guess if nothing else, Jeff, to me, it's a... folks, just so you know, up front, we had to walk in here. So if you still want to live here, the ambulance may not be able to get in here. We're going to give you the that's what I'm looking for. Advice. We're going to give you this under advisement that you're living here. Everything else is up to snuff, except your road sucks. And I don't want to go down the road where we're mandating somebody's driveway to get to these. I think if nothing else, we give them advice and saying, look, we had to walk in 100 yards to get here. Just so you know, everything else is up to snuff, but the ambulance has to get here. You never know. So,
well, because we're dealing with property maintenance standards, this is the perfect time to have that discussion, and appreciate your considering the possibility of doing that.
Jim, do you have a question?
Yeah, just how long is it going to be before you start doing this in people's private homes, not multi-dwelling?
We're not. As long as I'm sitting here, we're not going to. So, I'm just. Yeah.
I understand if you have an absentee owner and you have a 3, 4, 5 family home, I can understand it. But what about owner-occupied homes? I mean, this doesn't affect me. I only have 2 apartments, mine and the one upstairs. But what about owner-occupied homes? Are we going to be, you know, they have a kind of stake in there. They live there, you know? I mean, are we worried about them the same as you'd be worried about a landlord that isn't even in the area?
No, you're absolutely right.
As I said, it doesn't affect me, but I'm just bringing up the point, that's all. I mean, nobody wants the town to be able to come in and inspect their home anytime they want, and
And it wouldn't be any time. This is once every 5 years.
No,
I mean, this isn't coming.
Some of these regulations, you know, your neighbor doesn't like you, let's say. We're just giving our neighbor something to go to the town, use the town to attack their neighbor. I mean, that's a point.
And that's what I'm looking at, Mike. I mean, some of this stuff, like I said, a lot of this stuff was already here, and we've dealt with it for 18 years.
Yep.
And that's... When I was looking at all this,
over from where it was and leave it alone, you know, don't add to it, you know.